This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. That's the A-Train, Mr. Duke Ellington. And you can pretty much sum it up now, what we'll be discussing. I have my friend here, Michael Ostendorf, again this morning. We're going to be talking of a few issues on rail, and Dr. Jim Anthony was going to join us. So if he's out there, go ahead and we'll be initiating this conversation. And if you have any questions or comments regarding the rail, feel free to call. And we'll be also be talking about buses. And in the later hours, the second hour, I have an interesting discussion. I think it's interesting regarding the fire that's going on out there in Lu'ulu'ule. And we'll be joined, if things allow or permit, joined by the president of the Federal Firefighters Association of Hawaii, and some interesting things. In the earlier show with Poca, you heard about military and special favors and exemptions. You might be interested in this one, and we'll just toss things around, 524-1080, and you can grab this at carol@carolcox.com, and listen in like the many other thousands. And boy, it's simply amazing. So you're encouraging me, folks. When I go there and look to see there's 1,800, 2,800 looking a day, you're giving me a big head. So anyway, so much said. Mike, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Carol. Good morning, everybody.
Yeah. Now, did you take the boat or did you take the super ferry in this morning to talk about the train?
I drove.
Oh, okay. Yeah, good, because neither one of them worked out. So I wonder if they precursor or suggested what's going to be about the rail, if it comes in.
Well, I know one thing. I won't be standing for an hour and a half. I'm looking for a bus to sit down.
Well, there's such a great danger, a liability, I guess, because, you know, I have comments, some say just too often, about Mufi Hanneman. But and say I have bad things to say, and my goodness, man, I'm troubled to find something good about him. And again, this rail thing, and I was just thinking back, we're talking about rail and the consequences and the problems that it may present. But let me go back and look at the boat, just an example.
Yeah.
It's mass transit. The intent was, it was an idea of Mufi Hanneman's. Was supposed to help.
Great project for the community.
Yeah, and was going to go from the Aloha Tower all the way to Kalailoa. Now, if anybody out there has ever driven into Kalailoa in the afternoon, driven out of it in the afternoon, you know that there's heavy traffic. So you have to drive out of Kalailoa. Don't mention getting into it. But I was looking at some of the articles where Hanneman was quoted in articles. Zimbio, for example, May 14, 2009. Hanneman boasted about, you know, the commuter ferry had carried 110,000 passengers since its launch, including many families and tourists sometimes took the two-hour trip just to get out on the water. And they was talking about the various commuter boats. The boat commuter ferry service will cease operation at the end of June. Now, this is Hanneman's baby. He brought it in to assure us going to lessen the traffic impacts and moving the people. Hanneman announced Wednesday the same day attempts to bring back the inter-Ireland super ferry. So this is just to set the tone. And we're supposed to trust this ferry or this train. The boat fails, and he propped that up, and there was some $4 million, $5 million in subsidies from the federal, $4 million, $4 million from the city council.
Yeah.
And it failed, too.
You're right.
It was. And as soon as it failed, he turns around and declared that if he was elected governor, he would bring back the super ferry.
Yep.
I guess a man that talks that much, you know what, needs a boat to haul it around and, you know.
Right. He was claiming it would provide direct traffic relief to half our island, improve traffic overall for nearly everyone on Oahu. You know, and it would keep the country country.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, none of it happened.
Yeah, I guess we're running the risk of sounding vulgar. This is a big man in the little boat, you know. so this is, this guy is, if people would only listen, and I just saw they erected a monument to him just yesterday, or Saturday. Yeah, yesterday.
Where?
Out there in the Ever Plains, they put up a big column. It looked like him. It spoke to him. And then you had all of his worshipers, Carlisle and everybody else, looking up to him. Great guy. I mean, God better watch out, you know.
So one of the columns finally went up?
Yeah, and they were out there bowing and praising the...
Well, they're just carrying on his legacy. I mean, that's all it is. I mean, Carlisle just came in. Mm-hmm. And he just continues doing what Mufi had planned. I mean, it's like his kid took over.
Mm-hmm. You got the same article. It says a rush hour service between Aloha Towers and Marketplace on the edge of downtown Honolulu and industrial area of Kalailoa in West Oahu costs just $2.
What? Come again?
For the trip on the boat. That's all it was costing, $2, sir. That's what this article claimed. But the city council figure, the math just didn't add up. With a $5 million federal subsidy, nearly $4 million in city costs and much more in daily operating expenses, estimates per passenger costs range up to $120.
Wow.
If people have short memories, just go back and read, Google some of these articles, and that's the joy of the Internet. The Internet has some crazy things, but, boy, it also has some memories.
So now that's why we get the parking meters with a little sensor so they can screw us. I mean, you know, remember Carlisle?
Oh, yeah.
So it will help save fuel because people will stop driving around and around and around and around looking for a meter with time on it.
Right. And,
well, I don't know anybody like that. I mean,
well, this is, tells you how out of touch these people are when they get in government. See, as a city prosecutor, he has a designated stall, so he never is in a panic, and you don't have the luxury of passing up a parking stall. You know, so that's strike one. You know,
right.
When I read that, I thought this guy is it's not that he's out of touch. He's above and beyond reality, but he's been living on the nipple of the public. You see,
well, that's what Caldwell said. He said he's locked out the community. That's what he said in his editorial. He's out of touch.
Yeah. And so is he, but I mean, the pot calling the kettle black.
You know, I know.
Like, but thank you, Mr. Caldwell.
I mean, it's like having two of Mufi's kid fight over the spot.
I'm my favorite. I heard they were having an argument the other day, and the argument was about which of them were Mufi's favorite child. You know, and the interesting thing that escaped them is that they didn't look like Mufi. They didn't act like Mufi. You know that poster that he had?
Right.
See, they don't look like him, but they're his kids. But and it's kind of crazy. But this is, he's quoting here, "I have not ruled out a return of the boat in the future," Hanneman said, in announcing the decision to shut it down.
So you mean you know you're losing money, but you're not ruling out losing some more?
Right, because it's not his money, and this dude gets to play. He's been able to play with our monies and our affairs so much that forget arrogance anymore. This is beyond any imagination or any description.
Well, he was a master in disguise. I mean, remember now, he claimed always he wouldn't raise taxes, but he raised the fees on everything.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, your vehicle registration were tripled by now?
Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, meanwhile, he said the savings would be used for homeowner tax rebate. Now, if any of you out there got any tax rebates, could you please, I know it's privacy and what have you, could you please send me a copy or an email or just give me a phone call, 524-1080, and share with us if you did, in fact, receive a tax rebate from the Hanneman closing of the boat. And then he goes on to say now, the homeowner tax rebate and more bus service. Wait now, I thought last week we were talking about these things, and here we are. Bus services were cut, we lost the boat, and we're seeing buses, the number being diminishing here. But then he goes, although it wouldn't take many buses to carry the passengers who took the boat, several dozen bus trips a day have been tied to the service, often running near empty. Wow. Now, isn't that funny? I read that in a sense. So was he shocked that if he claimed, quote, to put more buses on to accommodate the passengers that didn't ride the bus would be empty?
Well, you know, that's the same thing with Carlisle. He makes it sound like once the thing is built, somehow the city and county has the money to pay for the maintenance. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they're cutting the bus routes because there's a $3 million shortfall. But where are they going to get the $100 million to operate this rail system? I mean, we're going to have some more parking meters? I mean, we're going to raise some other fees?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read this article and I thought this is classic. This is an opportunity of a lifetime, not our words, but words that we can associate and attribute to Mufi Hanneman himself. And we're going to benefit. So the rail is coming in, and what lies and promises has he made there? You know, if any of you can finger some of them, I'd be happy to share them with the listeners and what have you.
You know, I just read something that the new director for the, you know, who's supposed to implement this whole thing, whoever, the one that came in and said, you know, it looked kind of sad and we needed to rail.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about $9 billion now. The city keeps, or the call on and call, we'll keep talking about $5 billion. Somehow the newspaper has $7 billion. Now this guy who comes in, who's actually in charge of the project, he talks about $9 billion with some extra spurs. Mm-hmm. There's one thing I know about living in this town. When the government claims it's five, and you're reading seven in the newspaper, and someone mentions nine, it's going to be above nine when you count every cent and dollar in the end. Mm-hmm. It never pans out at the lower number. Never has, never will. I mean, that's just history repeating itself.
I hear the public say quite often, well, it's going to cost more. It's going to cost more than they're telling us. But what I don't see, I haven't read in the papers, or maybe they are not reporting it, or in the news accounts, that people are actually as mad as hell and taking their TVs and throwing them out the window when Mufi Hanneman's commercial comes on. I mean, that is enough, if you've seen it, to make you want to become violent and just trash your whole house.
Which one, the news one?
Yeah, the one where he has his cousin, who is a convicted felon, and that's out there at the Waianae Boat Harbor, who he gives quite often monies and grants that they can't account for the Leeward Landfill Benefit Package. Well, I've fumbled that term, but the benefit package out there in Waianae, Douglas Westbrook. You see, has a security company, but his wife, it's in his name, but he's a convicted felon, which is not, you're not a demon if you've been convicted, you've served your time, but it's just so interesting that here's a smiling face, and then when you mention crime, it's not, people tend to say, oh, check him out, check this out, check Mufi out. So when you look at all of this, here's this big smiling face, and you're trying to figure out now, is part of the grant monies that he can't account for that he got from Mufi Hanneman, and in some instances, while the requirement was a 501c3, but Hanneman exempted this organization under Ernie Martin, remember that name, and in turn put him in, you follow? And Ernie Martin, by the way, authored the 501c3 for our friend out there, Go Rail Go. Maida Timpson. This is per Timpson herself. So, in other words, I don't know if this is a train or is this is what this is, but back to that commercial. So you see that, and then simultaneously or concurrently, there was a flurry. There was these commercials that come out on and the front page ad, and then all of a sudden, there were signs on Waianae Coast, for example, posted up overnight, Mufi Hanneman. People called me, like four of them called me to say, you know, I'm feeling like I'm being bullied. These guys show up and put their signs on my fence, and I don't want them up there. And some of them actually challenged them, told them to take them down. But imagine, folks, if you think you're dealing with a politician, you're not. You're dealing with thug. You know, King Thug. There was King Tut. This is Hanneman, King Thug. And this is the way it is. Kahuku side, he got mad at some of his own people for posting Tulsi Gabbard signs up.
Wow.
Yeah. So, anyway.
The grant money for? What was the grant?
Well, supposedly it was to offset the cost for the presence of the landfill in that community.
So
along the west side, the coast there, Nanakuli, Waianae, Kapolei, and those areas, Kapolei, Hale, and
so. What's the cousin supposed to do with the grand money? Take out people to lunch to make it easier?
Well, interesting. You would ask that. quite often, we see and we went and visited and scanned all of the records, and we're still digesting those. But you were supposed to do programs that would benefit the community. So, for example, he had the West Side Athletics Foundation or something, a West Side Athletic Foundation. I get the right name, but again, we've talked about it on the show. But the question is, how does he get this money? And just mere appearance of unethical behavior. But I guess because the name Hanneman and Westbrook, people wouldn't put them together, you see, because quite naturally, Hanneman is a respectable politician, and so you wouldn't be, you know, in concert with someone who has a checkered past, right? Or if you ask many people out there, quite political, but for example, I'm told that as a result of my queries, there was scheduled sunset or the July 4th celebration. And his cousin, by the way, had received some of that money before. And this time I was told, and so I called around and asked and suggested, well, Peter Carlisle, why would you be giving Hanneman's cousin money in a grant?
Oh, you mean Carlisle continued to practice?
Oh, yes. And so as
you mean
a result,
he wouldn't question it as a former prosecutor?
Prosecutor? When Peter Carlisle became mayor, he didn't want anybody to know that he was a prosecutor. He used that to get in office. But remember, when you say I'm the city prosecutor, former city, that rings ethics. That rings,
yeah.
You know, it's synonymous with, hey, it reminds you, I'm
right,
a straight
we're gonna
shooter.
Sunshine now.
And we're going to have sunshine and transparency. Right. See, he gets away from that, and then he navigates the halls where cockroaches generally are found.
That's true. I heard he didn't interview any of the department heads. He just said, okay, everybody's still in.
Yeah,
good
well,
boy, that's it.
Like I disclosed last week or the week before, a letter where it was written to me from someone internally within the city describing how it unfolded, and that was close to Hanneman's campaign. And, you know, and for the world of me, I wished, you know, that the public, there was some kind of way. I mean, I know it would be wouldn't be democratic to, in a free nation, to look at a guy and tell him, you know what, you screwed us so much that we don't even want you around. In fact, we're going to strip you of your right to vote. We're going to strip you of your right to have any public opinion. And when I look at this guy called Hanneman, but instead he gets a front seat. He gets to have a paper, an article there to talk about the tourism and what have you. But going back to the tourism.
You know, the thing about Carlisle is, I mean, one thing I noticed, he doesn't seem to really care for the residents. Can you explain to me how come the non-residents' property tax was cut by 3% and ours was raised?
Yeah.
I mean, you know about that,
yeah.
Right? I mean, wait a minute. The people who don't live here get a tax break, and the ones who live here and have to put out, you know, on a daily basis,
mm-hmm.
we get a tax increase?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a little sly.
Yeah. I mean, tax break, I don't think there is such a thing with the Hawaiian community or with the Honolulu community or homeowners or anyone. The city council wouldn't know what a tax break was unless it was offering coffee and a cigarette smoke and some donuts. Other than that, the mayor wouldn't know what a tax break is.
You know, talking about tax breaks, for instance, we talked about the landfill for us before, too, right? Property tax covers, you know, picking up of garbage if you're in a single-family home out there, Mililani,
mm-hmm.
wherever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Residential home. Condos association all pay for their own garbage pickup.
Mm-hmm.
But they pay their property tax, too, so someone who pays, and they say, pay the same rate, right?
Mm-hmm.
So everyone that has a single dwelling, you know, standing on its own, doesn't have to pay for the garbage pickup.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone in a condo gets hammered with the association fees for the garbage pickup.
Right.
Where is that fair across the board?
Well, I can, funny now, you and I have never talked about this subject. And I've been holding off as I've been researching, but I'm going to let the cat out of the bag. And honestly, folks, I've never broached this subject to I'm following a line right now where condos can actually get their bins done for free. And there are a great many of them that do get there. And a lot of the churches get their, you know, the roll-off bins, that the truck that comes in and lifts and dumps overhead, like at your place, for example.
Yeah.
Well, a great many of them get it for free. And all that it takes is the city authorizing it. And all that the community has to do, or the apartment building or the association has to do, is ask for it. Mufi Hanneman's assistant deputy director of environmental services, his apartment building gets it.
You're kidding me.
Well,
I mean, every association should be out there right now applying for that waiver.
But hold on now. You know, things just don't happen in society, like, things just happen in nature, because nature is a process. Here, it's, I don't know what you call it, amongst people. Now, it's just so happened that one of the major people that companies that is Honolulu Disposal that service these condos and what have you, and this is not to implicate them, but just to say, Hanneman did have a working relationship with this company, Clyde Kaneshiro.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, did Hanneman openly let everyone know in these condominiums and the associations that they too can get an exemption, that they too, like churches and others, could get free dumping?
It should have been in the newspaper. It should have been on the 6 o'clock news. You know how many thousands and thousands of condo owners pay association fees just to dump the garbage?
Well, you know that I know that if there's your friend has a business that services these condos, you quite naturally wouldn't want to give the taxpayer what they're paying for. You would want to be silent so that your friends could slide in and get the contracts. You follow?
How long are you knowing this now?
Well, I don't want you to hit me. But
I feel like coming across the table.
I know. I could have saved you. That's why you should listen to the Carol Cox Show. But, no, I'm actually going to be disclosing that and have these documents and have a list, for example, out in Mililani, in those areas, where some gets it for free and others have to pay through their nose to private companies. So at a minimum, for example, why would a church be, a religious group, be given free dumping while a taxpayer who's paying got to go and hire a private company?
Well, they knew about it.
Yeah. Well, you know.
It's almost like some of those historic homes, I guess.
Oh, yeah. And Caldwell, wasn't he beneficiary of a private tax-exempt home, historic home?
Him too?
Yeah.
You're kidding me.
I'm pretty sure. Now, if I'm wrong, please hurry up and call me. But I thought I saw his name associated with, yeah.
Well, once again, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Yeah, especially in this town. And I tell you, this is, for example, now, Hanneman is touring. This is why I like this article, going back to this Zimbio article of May 14, 2009. See, it says the demise of the boat followed the removal by Norwegian Cruise Lines of two of its three big ships from the inter-island cruise market because of the tourism decline, and the court ordered suspension of the Hawaii Super Ferry, which had been the state's first inter-island car and passenger service because of the environmental challenges. Now,
that's the reason why that boat failed?
Well, this is why they're saying the Norwegian cruise lines pulled out. This is what
because of the super ferry.
Yeah, and so now, you know, so even the tourism business is forgiving to Hanneman. I mean, if you lose two large cruise line or three or whatever, and you're the mayor and you all got a tourism package and a tourism department and you fail these people, they then turn around and hire him. He must have done some serious backdoor dealings on other matters for them to forgive this kind of stuff. You see, I tell you, I'm careful because maybe he's protected by the great authority, because I tell you what, I've seen people get run out of town for less.
Right, but the way you were just reading this article, it's like it makes it sound like we lost two cruise ships coming in because we lost the boat and the super ferry?
Well, demise of the boat followed the removal by Norwegian Cruise Lines two of its three big ships from the inter-island cruise market because of tourism declines and the court ordered suspension of
the
super ferry.
Well, that makes no sense. He had the boat to go from Ever to downtown so residents would ride it.
Yeah.
Don't tell me that the second leg is not going to be with tourists. Well, I mean, the thing was only going to do two trips.
Yeah.
One from Ever to downtown and then downtown to Ever.
Yeah.
So where does a tourist fit into
this
picture?
Well, I mean, this is what they're attributing because of, you know, the demise. I know, you know, it's business, you know. And,
so we're going to have the tourists drive out to Ever so you can ride the boat in.
Well, the boat is gone now. Remember, they sent them to Seattle. But I've often wondered about that. First of all, the condition of the boat were questionable. And then secondly, who really, I haven't had the time to sit down and track back who these guys are that got the boat. I guarantee you it wasn't just open bid and what. I promise you, I'll put my neck on the line and everything that I call integrity online here and say that somewhere down the line there was hook and crookery involved in even the boat process, because it, when they looked at the numbers, they should have said it's not going to work.
Sure. I mean, it's obvious.
So obviously.
You didn't see no private businessman wanting to, you know.
Right. But again, both of these now, these boat and this ferry are now primarily privately owned. And Gale Breath, as we know, who's the one affiliated with now Hanabusa's thing, and his wife is a lawyer here, a judge here. So it was important that they try and sell that ferry, by the way, because that super ferry, because he tanked. He lost his butt on that. And so... So is this whole deal about the super ferry and selling it and all of that to protect Galbraith and those guys? Garibaldi, I'm sorry. And right?
I don't know.
Well, but I mean, that's... And so Mufi was going to step right in as governor immediately, come back and do the environmental impact statement and boom. But then somebody told him, but Mufi, you first got to take care of the Olawai, 40 million gallons of sewage, raw sewage that you dumped into the Olawai, and then you got to get up the cement out of the river that you dumped, right. And then you got to, you know, the Kaiwanui marsh that you've been for many years now dumping leachate from the old landfill directly into the marsh. You can't do that because there's a guy called Carol Cox might be reminding the public, see. But this is how bold this gentleman is. He simply, I don't know what the game is.
Well, no transparency. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it seems like the two kids of his, there's no transparency either.
Yeah.
So which brings us to what? The third candidate, the only one that ever had any transparency and integrity.
I'm curious how many, is there anybody else, and maybe it's my recklessness to ask if there's anybody else running for mayor other than the
two fill-ins?
Yeah, I know, the two fill-ins.
Fill-ins. Business as usual.
Yeah, and they all seem to get their marching orders from Senator Danny Noy. You know, it's like I'm thinking to myself. I woke up the other night and thinking, you know, they say Republicans are bad, but then nobody will say anything about the Democrats, because you know that if you need to get your trash up, the guy that come pick your trash might be Mufi's cousin. You know that if you go watch the fireworks at the beach, it might be Mufi's cousin putting on the fireworks show. You know that if you need you got to walk by a security guard, it might be Mufi Hanneman's cousin as a security guard. So maybe that's why people are just silent. And maybe that's why they're just going, just show me the voting box and I'll vote for you, man. I don't want any trouble. I don't want them visiting my house. I see your cousins and your relatives at the chicken fights. Just yesterday, I got a call. I couldn't make it out there. A chicken fight on DHHL land, Hawaiian homelands, in that area at the end of Waianae Valley Road. Some
right.
Large number of people there, you know, and the amount of money that goes out there. And for those of you who want to come and get me about talking about chicken fights, and all, I don't eat chicken, so you do what you got to do. But we got to get the word out. There's just corruption, corruption, corruption. And again, with this rail, I wish, and I'm hoping somewhere down the line, someone's in a back room investigating the criminal aspects of this, the elements of this, the wheeling and dealing. Now, will Ben Cayetano bring relief? Now, I hope that just to get the two twinlets, Hanamets, what do you call them?
The
Hanamets. Yeah, you know, that someone come along and, you know, we got to be reminded that Hanneman appointed, or he was responsible for getting Caldwell in.
That's right.
The director, right? He was a city director. Now all of a sudden his commercial says, I understand. No, I don't think you understand, because if you had to compete for that job, and demonstrate, it'll be a big difference. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question? Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. You have a comment or question?
Yes, in regards to Mr. Hammond's relationship with Mr. Carlisle, people got to remember that organized labor in Hawaii still owes Mr. Hammond. They failed to get him in as governor. Yeah, they still owe him one, yeah?
Okay.
And Mr. Carlisle, in his campaign for mayor, I distinctly, one of his slogans was, I was a prosecutor for 14 years. I know where the cooks are, and I know who they are. That was his campaign slogan.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems that the cooks are still where they are, and who they are is a question, remains a question.
You're right about that, and I will sign an affidavit based on to confirm.
I will too.
You know, I agree with you. But what
okay,
do you
gang.
What do
Take
you
care.
Think? All righty.
Hello.
What do you think about this?
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, you there?
Go ahead.
What
yes.
do you think about this process? You believe that the boat, the way it was handled, demonstrate or calls into question? Give us some insight on how we should expect the rail to run.
Oh, definitely. Certainly. You know, the only thing that government does well, excels in, is taxation.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what level it is, you
know. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they could have put it out to some private enterprise and let them try to run it for a while
mm-hmm.
instead of just dumping it, you know.
Yeah. But,
you know,
yeah, okay.
It's sad that the ferry didn't go through. The ferry had a lot of positive things with it, but the way they went about it was, of course, just blew it out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah.
You know, for the neighbor island people, basically. But the cost of just going to the neighbor islands, airfare, mm-hmm. it is so ridiculous. We have one airline who monopolizes everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the ferry would have been something good, yeah.
Well, that's why government should be honest and follow the rules of the road. If the requirement
of
is if the requirement
Certainly.
Is
well, you have the Land Use Commission
mm-hmm.
voiding the statutes that they're supposed to enforce.
You mean the Land Abuse Commission? You say
abuse? Yes,
okay,
abuse.
Okay.
Yeah,
because right, that
you have and you have the City Council overriding ordinances, namely the budget reserve of 20%.
Mm-hmm.
They don't repeal or amend. They just void
mm-hmm.
because they hide under immunity clauses.
Well, keep in mind, and this is the other point of this discussion, is that if you vote for Hanneman, for example, as governor, he gets to appoint the commission, right? So if he has his hand in big money pocket, big business pocket. So when you, the taxpayer, go out to say no before the commission, just remember, like his Hannemets over there at the city council or city hall, then you're going to get the same results at the commission. That's why it's important when we vote for someone to realize down the line that they get to appoint. He may make great promises to you up front, but still yet he has control and say and people indebted to him for appointing him in the commission.
Oh yeah, he's no different than the thoroughbred running the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah,
they got a bridle on him too.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He goes in a direction where they turn him basically.
Yeah, and he's
Hanneman's beginning was with the Big Five, Doc Pryor.
Right.
C. Brewer. Yes, he's beginning.
And he still is in tight with C. Brewer. A lot of the activities that go on financially and contracts
oh, sure.
and goes directly to BEI and HTC from the purchasing of
certainly,
city trucks
certainly.
And all. So,
well, and anyway, basically, hopefully the people will have better understanding of what's going on and vote with wisdom.
Right.
Not with pocketbook. Okay, brothers.
All right. Yeah.
You know, you mentioned earlier that, you know, Hanneman appointed Caldwell. And now we got Carlisle, Caldwell, and Cayetano. The funny thing is, though, now since Caldwell noticed that Carlisle is not too popular with his, you know, I'm just following the law and I'll be damned and, you know, full steam ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So what does he do? He starts adopting language from Cayetano's
oh, yeah.
campaign. You know,
yeah.
like, oh, let's take another look at it. Maybe we don't want to have the rail elevated in certain areas.
Mm-hmm. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Cox, for taking my call. I hope you can hear me. The city, Mayor Murphy Hanneman and Deputy Mayor Murphy Hanneman and Carlisle, when they talk about the rail system, they seem to, and along with their entities like Parker, Brinkerhoff, the construction people, mm-hmm. they seem to talk, pick the cities, few cities where maybe it's breaking even or possibly might be working out. But Chicago is a very good example of how it doesn't work out. Chicago has a population of almost 13 million people, and it has an extensive bus system and elevator train system. It also has IC, Central, bringing people in from the southern suburbs to the downtown area. And again, from the west, there's another train system coming up from the western suburban areas. Again, like I said, it also has the elevated heavy trains, the L subways. And it's run by the Chicago Transit Authority, which is controlled by the Regional Transportation Authority. And the Regional Transportation Authority is like an oversight, and they also do the funding. But the funding is done through taxpayers with sales tax. I guess it would be kind of like hard here, is going to be here. Mm-hmm. And they're always running into deficit, and they're raising taxes all the time. But the point I'm trying to make is that with all of this, they still have rush hour traffic during the morning and evening, rush hours on the Dan Ryan, the Eisenhower. So it hasn't alleviated traffic. It's like people who understand are stating here that it factually does not alleviate traffic. Mm-hmm. So that was my point. It's just going to be a waste of just billions of dollars. And the people who will be employed will be people that are union people and their cronies, their extended families. It won't be that average Joe Blow who works at McDonald's who could work as a laborer or, something mm-hmm. Semi-skilled or unskilled work that's connected with this project. It'll go to, again, like I said, to just recirculating with the people that will benefit from it. So that's my comment. I appreciate you letting me
All
say
right.
that.
Well, thank you.
All right.
Yeah, I think you make that caller makes a good point. I mean, when you look at a track record of people, what have they done in the past when they were in a position to do something? They never thought out of the box. They never even addressed the traffic congestion, never even asked people to look at alternatives mm-hmm. to ease the traffic congestions. Instead, it's just all rail, 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 because mm-hmm. That's where the money is flowing. But Ben, on the other hand, is willing to take a look at everything under the sun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, someone raised the issue with, says, you tend to speak favorably to Ben Cayetano.
True, because he's willing to look at other things.
Well, see, I there were some issues that I have when he was governor, but that's life. But on the other hand, I've never seen, I can't tell you about corruption. Yes, there's issues. For example, Kapolei High School was built under Cayetano's administration. Questions came in. Well, how did Kobayashi end up getting the contract? So these are things that are present in politics. But this type of politics, you got the ethics commissioner, the one that runs the office, whose office is covering up for Hanneman's misdeeds and illegal activities. No one has ever come to me and said, well, Ben Cayetano did this illegally. Right. I called the ombudsman when he was the governor, for example, you called the ombudsman, you got results. You got, and then when it came down, when everyone else was saying, well, we can't stop shark finning and that's an ethnic issue and it's going to look like racist, Ben Cayetano signed the bill to ban shark finning here in Hawaii, the right. first time, right? So environmentally, Kalejo, for example, the guy that's on his team, and yes, Ben and Neil Abercrombie are friends. They have great meetings early mornings. But again, I haven't had anybody to say that his behavior rise to the occasion of hiring his cousins, funding money, of that type of behavior. If it does, I'll talk about it. If you've got facts, let's talk about it. But in this, I've never seen such septic and such a cesspool of malfeasance and misappropriations and diversion of monies and lying and cheating, led by, no one can say Ben Cayetano is on the same team as a, has a prosecutor, a former prosecutor on his team to lie, cheat, and steal for him.
No.
See, that's what what got me, you know, and that's not advocating for Ben Cayetano. Government has done us good over the years. I mean, I can imagine if we didn't have some rudder in society. It's not perfect, but on at this rate we're going in Honolulu, it's going to be hell.
Well, you know, what I remember about him being governor, it wasn't all just, you know, go along, get along, and everything mm-hmm. else, and this is it. No, he made tough choices. He laid people off.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that. You know, that was the biggest uproar. As soon as he got into office, he eliminated state position and laid state people off.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, it's not exactly the kind of act that someone, you know, to make friends. No, I think it was integrity. There was transparency. If there was a question, hey, you know, an answer would be forthcoming. But this year, no, I'm sorry.
I mean,
with those two guys.
I go back, and if I, in the days of Cayetano, I can attest to this. When I would file a FOIA or UIPA request, you know what I would get?
Tell the audience the FOIA. What it is.
You know, to Public Sunshine Act.
Yeah, Freedom
to
of
get
Information
Freedom of Information
Act.
And go into I draw this comparison to the modern day, the attorney, the prosecutor, the Carlisle, the Caldwells, and the Hannemans. There are letters posted in city buildings, and they're instructed, if Carol Cox shows up, call your higher management, your upper level management, number one. On the other hand, when Cayetano was in, Carol Cox could walk in the same day, okay? And I'm not exaggerating. I'm not advocating for just to draw the
comparison. Just a fact.
Just a fact. I could walk in and take a portable scanner, right?
Right. I remember those days.
And walk in, and they would have boxes. This is under Cayetano. When Cayetano left and the legal came in, you start seeing, well, make sure you ask him what he wants. Then once you finally strangle them to get it from them after a couple of weeks, then they tell you, okay, every document you take, you must write down and let us know what document you made a copy of.
Right, I remember
right?
that, yeah.
Those were the good old days when you go in and under the Cayetano administration, the clerks, the managers were apologetic.
For not getting it
for
fast
not,
enough
serious.
To you. That's right.
And then say to you, you know what? You have to drive down here. We're going to waive the fee.
Right.
Try that
now. It was something
now.
That was in the public's interest.
Try that now under the Lingle administration.
Oh, no.
Oh, you asked for documents? Oh, that's going to be $696 for four documents, five documents. Why the cost? Well, they got to research it. Yeah, but you've already given a portion of it to the newspapers and others.
Right.
And then now under the Hannemann, that's when all hell broke loose.
Right.
Put up the fences, put up the gates, make sure when he calls, send him a copy, tell him he has to get a copy of the formal form, send it back in, and then there's a delay. Then they give it back and then finally tell you, oh, it's going to be maybe $300, $790 or for $5 or $6. That is what I have issues with.
Hiding the ball.
Hiding the ball and violating my rights and not affording me, just another member of the public, due process. Because at least if you tell me, you deny me of those documents. I have a right. But I don't have much of a right if you don't tell me what you're denying me, when you're denying me. Then I have no means of going in and appealing it before a judge or before court.
See, this is what I don't like when government starts hiding things.
Mm-hmm.
Just remember when it comes to the press releases, you know, you are press, you are media, mm-hmm. you're on the news, you have your own radio show, and you have your own blogger space, etc. So by all means, you qualify as press. But what do? Make mm-hmm. sure we don't include Carol.
Yeah, yeah. And Donald and De La Cruz, the governor, Neil Abercrombie, the hippie from way back, the guy, the mellow fellow, liberal, I like colored people, they're good guys, and, you know, nobody should discriminate and whatever. This man, Neil Abercrombie, to date, even if I were not what you call, quote, a journalist, I still have a right to simply ask for an email of an electronic form that they're having a press release. Well, I can't get that.
You freelance for every newspaper station in town.
Yeah.
I mean, not newspaper, also TV station in town.
But they don't respect that, so that's why I say...
No, because you cause trouble.
Yeah, exactly, trouble. Good morning, caller. You have a comment, a question?
A question, please.
Yeah, go ahead.
To Mr. Anthony, what legal requirements would I have to get information from the Board of Water Supply?
Well, let me correct you, Bob. Anthony was going to call in. We didn't hear from him, or I don't know what happened. Hope he's well. But go ahead, and maybe we can...
Well, maybe Shirley can answer that. You know, I'm trying to look into facts and figures with the Board of Water Supply. How much do they have to release to the public before they start asking, you know, for documents or for me or anything like that? Like, do I have to be a lawyer to ask them?
No.
Anybody can go in and ask. Anybody. So you have a right as a citizen to go in under the Freedom of Information Act and ask for information.
Yeah. And the Freedom of Information is federal. The term for this one in state is Uniform Information Practices Act, UIPA.
So you mean it's a federal offense if you don't give me the information?
Well, not quite. Depending on what age. Let's back up here, and maybe this will be helpful to many of the listeners. If you're looking for state or city agencies or county agencies or quasi-public agencies under the state, you file a Uniform Information Practices Act, 92F. And under there, you have a right, and again, they've deviated from that. You have a right to go in the office on normal working days, 8 to 5, and view the documents and make copies, and they must provide you an opportunity to make copies. So you can walk in. Now, they may tell you, well, we need a little time to put this package together based on what you were wanting, right, what specific documents, right? And so they may say, you'll have to come back, but give us some specifics, and they may have to redact certain things that are either proprietary information and things of that nature, or things that someone has written and they want to take out the phone numbers or social security numbers.
Well, you know what I'm thinking of doing? They have this gentleman that comes to the neighborhood boards. He used to be here in Kahalu from the water board.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I could have some facts and figures that I want him to you know, verify. And maybe you could ask him instead of going down there looking, you know, dealing with them guys in an office building. Like he could give them back to me. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what's the easiest way to get facts and figures from the Board of Water Supply.
Well, I tell you what, I'm coming out in the close of this hour. If you want to come back, or I can just tell you basically, all you have to do is write them a letter, a fax, a letter, or go online and get a copy of their formal form and say, I want a copy of these records and be specific. And they have 10 days to respond to you and have you the documents.
Thank you, Carl.
All right, if you have any other questions, go. All righty. Aloha, and I hope you'll join me in the next hour. 524-1080 is the number. My guest is Mike Alsendorp, and we're sitting here just talking primarily about rail and hell and politics.
Well, actually, hoping for some change.
Yeah, so we'll be back in the next hour. Aloha.
Hello.
Hello, baby.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108.
Okay, good morning again. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Just back and with Michael Ossendorp, and we're talking about rail and politics and crooked politicians, corruption, people that think they are entitled, and you know the game. Apparently, there's a royalty. I thought it only existed in Europe and London and those areas, but there seemed to be a royal family or you know, royal something. I ain't going to say it. I'll let you fill in the blanks. But anyway, with this, again, like the caller earlier talked about the question of documents and what have you have a right to know what your government is doing. Because, you know, the government is... We know the mantra of the people, by the people, for the people, and that. But again, actually experiencing it becomes a different ball game. And what is happening while we say agencies do things, it is the legislators who, like Willis Sparrow, who introduced that dumb bill, that, you know, vexatious requester. I mean, this guy should have known that the last thing you want to do, especially when you look at his background and where he come from, the last thing you want to do is impede the layman or the public's access to government. But what happened? He gets a free job, free lunch. He gets to walk around with a clean shirt on at taxpayers' expense. He gets to go to the office. He gets to hang with the big boys and be invited to put up erect columns and what have you on a rail that's going to hell. And in turn, this is what we get, you see. So that's why it's important, in why it's a reality to me. I'm not ashamed of what I say. I'm not afraid of what I say, because when you stand back and look at it, these are real issues. Your rights are being diminished. They're carving them away. They're not driving through with guns like they do in other countries and shooting you and snatching you. But they're stripping you of your basic rights, and that is transparency. Because if you don't know what your government is doing, then you can't really take issue with your government. You can't really have comment on your government. You can't have a real insight on the rail and the monies and what have you, because of the hook and crookery and the shadowing and the hiding of documents and not being public. So anyway, that's
who makes a determination that someone is a vexatious person, you know, requesting a vexatious requester?
Yeah,
who makes that determination? Him?
That team of thieves that sit there and call themselves legislators and administrators and what have you. So,
because there is such a thing as a vexatious litigant, but you know, that's a court that makes a determination,
right,
that this person just has filed too many frivolous lawsuits.
Mm-hmm.
So how is a request for information that you're entitled to by law,
yeah,
all of a sudden become frivolous? I mean,
right,
there needs to be a finding of frivolous.
Right.
How is he going to make that? Because you ask too many questions, Carol?
Mm-hmm. And it's a dangerous precedent, and it's a danger, it's a trap, because first of all, I myself may make a request for the same documents 5 or 6 times. But the qualifier is that I may write the Clean Water branch, and they may sit on it for 10 days and then turn around and says, oh, this is not that department that handles that. You need to talk to the wastewater branch. And then you call the wastewater branch and you send a request in. Oh, you no. You need to talk to the city's wastewater branch. So by the at the end of the day, the will of sparrows and the other doodads over there that legislating actually turn around and will not hear that part and will not give you an audience to tell you, to tell them what they're doing or what the system is doing to defraud you. So he sits there and passes, and he looks good, and then he gets his free ride of his welfare check from the public. And that's what it is now, because they don't do anything for us. So it's welfare, you know. And the only difference between them and someone in southern Mississippi with low economy is that they get to wear clean clothes and they get to put gas in their fancy cars. But it's all welfare. They don't do anything for us. They impede us as a people, as a free people.
It's playing a shell game.
Yeah. And you know, they may call themselves and they may say they're legislating, but it's welfare as far as I'm concerned, because they do nothing for it. Now, unlike the people who fall on hard times, ill, sick, or what have you, and need assistance, public assistance, these dudes struggle to get into the welfare mode.
It's like the two C's, the two Hannemanlets.
Yeah, oh, the Hannemets.
Yeah.
Yeah, not,
they haven't
not
done anything either while they were in office.
Not
so.
Puppets, but Hannemets.
Right.
Yeah,
they're not doing much either, you know. So.
But, you know, one thing, I was going to, going back to this boat and talking about the rail, because, quote, this is from the Honolulu Advertiser, June 10th, 2012. And it says that... we are happy that this is when we, it was on October 31st, 2007. We are happy that so many people, this is quoting Hanneman, we're happy that so many people have chosen to use this new service, said Mayor Mufi Hanneman. Quote, the boat is providing our residents with a choice they never had before, a choice to use a ferry linked to bus service. I've always said we're looking to offer people options in an integrated multimodal transportation system, and I'm pleased that they are taking advantage of the boat. No, that's not true. You're taking advantage of us, Hanneman. That's what you should have said, but it never gets reported that way, but we'll try to report it that way here. So, you know, ridership offers dramatically on different ferry runs each day. So... I'm reading this while it's saying, what does that have to do with rail? because this is the same guy that talked about rail with all the grand promises, and if he couldn't handle a little boat pulling in and out of a harbor and determining if it was going to be profitable and effective, this rail is beyond his brain cells. I'm sorry. And his integrity. And that explains why he had all the backdoor dealings with handing the contracts and all of that stuff.
Right.
Good morning, caller. Comment or question?
Comment and question, maybe.
All righty.
My name is Richard.
All righty.
I've called before.
Okay. What can we help you
it's
with?
It's on the rail.
Okay.
It's about Grabowskis and about the five experts were picked for the alternative. It's about the information meetings at Rodford and Farrington, and my question is, where are the minutes for the experts who picked Steel Wheel on Steel Track?
Mm-hmm. And you've been asking for those documents?
No, that's what I want to find out, how I do that. I don't think there's any minutes.
I don't know the details, but I would say start with your neighborhood board. You probably can go. You have access to online?
No, I don't.
Okay. Do me a favor. Later on, call 782-6627.
Repeat that one more time, Tom.
782-6627.
Okay, I have a comment to make.
Yeah, go for it.
Please let me, because I've been very active since 2008. Grabowskis was on another radio station, and when asked about alternative solutions then, he said he wished he had been here and he might have made a different decision. The five experts who were brought here to pick Steel Wheel on Steel Track, who are they? Who picked them? They met on Friday. Monday was a holiday. Met Wednesday, and then Friday they made their decision. I was at both Rodford and Farrington at the neighborhood informational meetings. They weren't. They were an advocacy for rail. You signed in posters up Steel Wheel on Steel Track. The administration presented a PowerPoint, Steel Wheel on Steel Track. Luffy spoke, Steel Wheel on Steel Track. Then they had public speakers. The public was able to ask questions, and one person in particular, DeSoto, would say, well, I came here and traffic held me up. He did this at both Farrington and at Radford. Those were not informational meetings. The public was not informed and educated. They were advocacy meetings.
Now, when you say DeSoto, which DeSoto?
Well, I don't know which one he is, but apparently he works. He's paid by heart now as a consultant and or some other position.
Was it John DeSoto, former city councilman?
I think that's who it was.
Okay.
And everything that I heard you say last week and today, the city council, it's going to be 8-1 vote. It might be 7-2. And if there is any problem with a supermajority whereby they need 6, what will happen, they will vote with reservation. And it's worse than the last city council. A poll went to Disney, Tam, and then Dela Cruz went to the state capitol. There is collusion, conspiracy. When you use the word investigation, I pray there is some kind of formal investigation for what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, do that. Give me a call, and we'll see if we can help you track down.
Okay. 782.
6627.
Okay, I have that. Thank you very much. Thank you for your service.
Yeah,
bye.
If I don't get the info, I can't get it to you. So
okay, thank you.
Aloha.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, now we have joined us, and we'll continue on this. Mr. Reed Shimabukuro. Reed?
Hey, morning, Carol.
Good morning. Reed is from the Federal Firefighters Union out here. It's the Federal Firefighters of Hawaii, Local F-263. And, Reed, just for 1 minute, I'm going to have a comment by my guests here, and then we'll move into this, and I'll explain with the listeners out there. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Well, all I wanted to close up with is when it comes to these two guys, Caldwell and Carlisle, I just don't feel it. I mean, I just don't see it. I don't feel it. You know, I get this double talk. They seem to be talking out of both sides of their mouth. Carlisle now, he's flopping because he can see how unpopular Carlisle's position is, you know, telling the people to take a hike, I'm just following the law, you know, too late, so sad, too bad. You know, now he's like, oh, maybe we need to lower some portions of it, right? So he's trying to put himself in the middle. The only thing I know is with Ben, you get what you see. Mm-hmm. There's no double talk. And he always has been there for the people more than for the business. It's not just all about business. First thing I know about Carlisle, as soon as he got in office, he's traveling.
Oh, yeah.
On whale money.
Yeah. And, you know, we give him cars and he drives up in a blue Mustang, you know.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Okay, I just wanted to close out on that one.
All right. But, yeah, and join me on this one. Reed, I'll just lay the foundation here with and introduce you.
Can you email this one more time?
Sorry, Carl?
Yeah, what happened was is that the fire, the public knows of a fire that occurred that started in Lualua Lake. And there was some concerns, and it got out of control, and it's still burning on up the canyon and up in the state forest land now. So can you give us some background about yourself and some of the conditions at Lualua Lake? You wrote me a letter, and I wanted to share that with the public. And hearing what it was and some of the issues and conditions that exist out there.
Well, our concern is this. In July of 2011, our fire chief had informed us that he would be closing the fire station out there at Lualua Lake. And that concerns us because that fire station, although it may not be very busy, it does have a huge important mission out there, and not just for Lualua Lake, but for the tracking station above Yokohama Bay, Makua Valley, and even Waianae Rest Camp, those federal installations. And, you know, going into a heavy brush fire season, I don't think anybody anticipated how hot and dry it would be this summer. Mm-hmm. But we're just getting started into our brush fire season.
And we know that munitions are stored there.
Correct.
And we know that there should always be someone at the ready there immediately, given the nature. And I don't want to discuss in detail because it is military, and I'm a believer in not disclosing things if it goes into security or what have you. But there's ways of talking about it without giving the greater details. And
yeah, I think what's important, Carol, is this. You know, that fire station out there stands alone. Our nearest responding company is probably going to come out of the Pearl City, Manana area. Depending on what time of the day that is, you know, if we get a call during heavy traffic hour, it could be a 45-minute response, maybe an hour response, depending on the traffic.
Right.
Hey,
he's waiting for you. Yeah, okay. Sorry about that. We had to do something on the electronics.
So this station, so the public would know, this station that you guys had normally would man four men, and they're in Lualua Lake, but they close it. But do they give any real reason for closing it other than budget cuts, or what's the explanation?
Two things that we've heard. One of them is, of course, budget cuts. The second thing that we've been hearing is there's been a change in the category of the installation. It went from a category 1A, which requires 24-hour fire protection, 365 days a year, to a category B, which is no fire protection, and they can rely on mutual aid. And our partners with HFD would be responsible for responding to that installation.
Mm-hmm. And so the public should know, I wrote a letter to the governor asking, suggesting, and requesting that he convene a task force to look into this. I wasn't aware of the fact that they had shut down the station. And then this station, they're only there when there's activities around the munition, correct, or the contractor there. Am I correct?
Yes, currently, what we're as of the 22nd of April, we've been providing intermittent services. When I say intermittent, it's basically from the hours of 8 or 9 a.m. to the time the contractor leaves, which is about 4 in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. Once the contractor is done for the day, then our filling company out there secures and goes back to their respective area.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I learned, and if you have anything to speak to this, that the initial team responding to that fire that is now still burning for some 5 days was actually, they were there timely, and in turn requested airdrops, and the airdrops requested a helicopter airdrop of water to aid them, and that was overruled. Have you been able to confirm, or have you heard similar?
That's exactly what I heard. Just to back up a little bit, our filling company for that day was out there with just an engine company, and our normal prior to the closing of that fire station is we've always had an engine company and a brush truck out there, which would help in aiding and assisting in brush fires. But on that given day, I believe it was Monday, the filling company was just an engine company. It had no brush apparatus there in the station. The fire was becoming to a point where it was inaccessible, and a call, I believe, from the battalion chief was we needed some air support, and I believe that request was denied.
Mm-hmm. So they're needlessly endangering the life of the firefighters by not providing them with the right equipment?
Well, that's one part of it. I mean, I think more importantly is, you know, you try to contain the spread of the fire as quickly as possible. Sometimes out there in the mountain, it's very difficult to get to with just manpower. And that's why you see HFD has Air One flying out there quite a bit, helping with the extinguishment. And then the size of this last brush fire, there was, I think, on one day, there were 5 helicopters being provided for services, you know, especially for those areas where firefighters can get to.
Right. What was the rationale by whoever was making the decisions higher up to initially deny you guys the proper equipment?
Well, I only read what was in the store advertisement. I haven't had an opportunity to speak to our management yet. And according to the statement that our fire chief provided to the advertiser, Dave said that high winds was the reason why they couldn't get a chopper out there. And then also, something new that I've heard, they needed approval from the Department of Defense and some joint task force for Homeland Security. 2 things that I've never heard before, but I mean, they may be correct, though. I'm not sure, and seems like it's something that we never had to go through before. But I know high winds was mentioned in the advertiser article.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but that would be up to the pilot to make a determination. I mean, he's the most qualified.
Well, our question with high winds is, you know, from our standpoint, there were 5 choppers already flying, and if there was a concern over high winds,
right.
why was there 5 helicopters in the air already?
Yeah. Now, I witnessed a fire when I discovered it, and I called and took pictures, sent it to the news stations. I did actually see shortly thereafter 1 HFD chopper flying over the fire. And so I'm puzzled when they say that the winds were too heavy, yet here was a Honolulu Fire Department chopper flying over there, attempting to douse it out. Something's wrong there. Something just doesn't wash.
Well, no, I mean, I have no answer for that. I haven't heard any real reasons other than what was in the paper.
Now, you filed an action against a work action, or what it was called, illegal or unlawful work practice?
We filed an unfair labor practice because we felt that the department has an obligation to either bargain or consult on these changes,
mm-hmm.
changes such as closing the fire station,
mm-hmm.
Reassigning 11 individuals or firefighters to other stations, and this is something that should be covered with labor management cooperation and bargaining.
Mm-hmm.
We did make some suggestions on cost-saving measures, so this isn't something that the union is completely resistant and we're up in arms about these changes, we understand that the budget is being cut. We just have a difference of opinion on where we should be cutting the budget.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, we talked about response and how about calculated risk? Is this such a thing in the language of or the dialogue of the upper management? Are they just saying that we know that we're going to take our chances by closing this, we're going to take our chances that nothing will happen, and if it does, we'll deal with it then?
It's a term that we hear all the time, you know, calculated risk or risk management, or, you know, I mean, I think what they do is they've been looking at the number of calls that this fire station responds to on a yearly basis. And
mm-hmm.
yes, it is one of our slower stations, but there is a definite need for this fire station. It's, mm-hmm. it's for fire protection, not just for Lu'ulu'u Lake, but mm-hmm. we do respond to many fires up in the Makuhu Valley area. The tracking station above Yokohama, we're going into a very extremely dry brush season. It's starting early. In my opinion, it's only going to get worse unless we get some heavy rain.
Mm-hmm. And unless we get that rain and then the wet down things and make green again, the problem I have is in watching this. There seemed to be this pattern of we see a fire, it's reported, we hear from the city that, oh, everything's going great, and there are greater concerns out there, the environment. They say, well, no one got hurt in this fire. But the problem is, given the nature of the munitions that are stored there, I don't believe, and now also given this current situation where there's a fire that started there, which just ripped apart all of their theories that everything was okay. We have a fire that's been out of control for the last 5 years, and yet they insist on closing the thing. And I heard indirectly that they're now going to think about keeping it open for another couple of weeks. Did you hear anything, or have they informed you of that?
I just got sent an email from one of our firefighters from our upper management, basically stating that they're going to cover the installation with fire protection for a 24-hour period starting tomorrow.
Okay.
And it'll extend till the 24th, which is basically 2 weeks.
Right, okay.
I think that's putting a Band-Aid on the problem. Who's to say that something doesn't happen after the two-week period?
Yeah, I think, and I would like to be careful, but because we wrote those letters and I filed a FOIA asking the military or asking Pearl Harbor, I want to get a copy of the radio communications of that day of the fire, the original. And I think in there we will hear how they just nonchalantly dismissed the need and the request made by the officers or the firemen that were there. Just recklessly said, no, you're not getting fire drops. You're not getting helicopter drops. And it was nothing to do with wind, but we're waiting for those tapes. We'll see if they really mean it. But I think as a result of that, and they know that we have been communicating with you, they want to tell the public, here's the Band-Aid. But the bigger issue is that these are munitions that can go up, create a problem, and the proof is right here. We're looking at it right now. There's a 5-day fire of 6 days that have burned out of control. And so their theory simply don't work, does it?
Well, there's a greater concern. And yeah, the fire is right now pretty much concentrated to the northwest corner of the base. But we still have the whole east side of the base that's still dry,
mm-hmm.
still overgrown, and still has a potential for brush fire. We're in early June. It's only going to get hotter. It's only going to get drier. And the concerns are still going to be there, even after the two-week period.
If we could just portray to the public what the situation really is, a real one, where there's no one there in the mornings or at night, and so when the contractor gears up, goes up to do whatever they do with munitions, you folk respond with them, right? Not just to routinely go up if they're going to be working with munitions, correct?
Well, what happens is the contractor is there for not just transportation of munitions.
Mm-hmm.
They're responsible for that. And then the storage of munitions.
Mm-hmm.
But basically what happens is the company is located at the fire station during the day unless called out for an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
So for the period of, say, 8 hours, they're on the installation, on Lululele, ready to respond if called upon. Once they go back because the contractor is done for the day,
then
there is no fire protection other than HFD and the city and county outside.
Mm-hmm. So we then are stuck, and I know there's joint agreements and whatever, and now they're working their little hearts out with choppers, and I don't know who's paying for it, but imagine that could have been abated or avoided early on if they just listened to the professional firefighter who was on scene. But instead, it's my understanding, the decisions were made by an individual who were not on scene and just dismissed it. Is that a fair assessment?
That's relatively accurate. Our department stood up what we call a DOC. It's a Department Operations Center. It's located at our Federal Fire Department headquarters building. And basically, it's a center similar to a natural disaster command post. And, you know, it's a place where resources can be called upon if needed.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think they've taken it a little too far. I think they've taken that operations center and have actually decided to manage the fire ground from that command post, which is, you know, located right there at Pearl Harbor and not at the fire scene.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have battalion chiefs out there making decisions or need assistance and is asking specifically for certain resources and get their resources or their request denied, I don't think it's being used as best as possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's
why you have a battalion chief. I mean, a battalion chief is somebody very important. I mean, we don't have too many even at the Honolulu Fire Department. When a battalion chief makes a decision, I mean, you know, God doesn't second guess.
Right.
So
yeah.
Who's a pencil pusher, Pearl Harbor, who has, you know, can't even see the fire from where he's sitting at, or he or she, whoever is the person. I mean, that's pretty... I only had one case once with the fire department. That was the Honolulu Fire Department. But battalion chiefs... even a chief won't second guess them. That's why they are battalion chiefs. That's why they got to this rank, because they make decisions and they make informed decisions and they know what's in the best interest to douse the fire and to protect the people.
So some listeners are understanding battalion chiefs and ranks. So a high ranking official that was on site made the decision to ask for fire drops, his assessment, but he was overruled by someone sitting in a tower.
Yeah.
Away from the scene. Pearl Harbor can't...
And my understanding is from listening to him that this person might not even be a firefighter or might have no training in firefighting.
Is that true?
No. No, oh. It is one of our chief officers.
Okay.
It is. Okay.
Who's been in the field before, but...
Correct. But again,
look at the tremendous amount of money, the high cost that has been expended by the city and county of Honolulu when it all could have been resolved. It's not a guarantee that the fire drops, because the wind was pretty gusty, but the fact is they didn't do it. Now, how much money and resources is a city taxpayer going to foot the bill? That was another thing I asked the governor. See if we can recover these monies. You know, I know it hinges on, well, mutual aid, but again, this was a dumb decision, in my opinion.
You know,
well, they didn't have helicopter support on the first day when it was denied,
mm-hmm.
but they did have helicopter support on the second day.
Oh, yeah, because, at first, the same mantra, and just to go back, I add a little color to this. The second day, the assessment was 1,000 acres. Okay, this is the politics that goes on in this town when it comes to everybody covering their you-know-what. But the problem is it was 1,000 acres the day afterwards, the original day, And now it's only 1,200 acres, as the paper reports today. Now, how can you have a fire burning in a mountain range for 5 days, and it's only gone 200 acres since?
In 4 days.
Yeah.
So first day, 1,000, and next 4 days, 200.
Yeah. And that we heard, I and others heard munitions, and I have it recorded on my camera, going off in there, and then the city says, oh, no, there were no munitions. You know, it's gone to the borderline insulting, and so the need here is that I'm glad Reed came forward and saw that piece, because we need to know these things. The military should have told the public, especially Waianae, Nana Kuli, and even me, it's in my backyard of Mililani side. We should have been told that they were closing the fire station and leaving it to chance at 3 o'clock in the evening till 8 the next morning. You know.
Well, that's you know, that was our concern. I mean, of course, when we came to you, it was simply because the Star Advertiser had already launched a story, and we wanted to add to the story, I think, add some information that we felt that the public didn't know,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't being addressed. And I don't think anybody knew except for the people inside.
Right. And we appreciate you coming forward and letting us know, and hopefully the public listening to this, bigger questions will be asked and greater answers given.
You know, going backwards to the 1,200 acres, you said, how can it burn 1,000 in the first day and then only 200 in the next 4 days? Another way of looking at it is, on the second day, they were giving all the equipment they asked for.
Right.
So that's why it was only 200 for another 4 days. So just imagine what they could have done on the first day if they would have received all the equipment. The whole thing could have been just 100 or 200.
Right.
I'm just speculating here,
no,
but there's two ways of looking at it. You know, another question is, the contractor for the munitions storage area who has to work there, aren't they ticked off? I mean, wait, I go into a contract. I'm under the impression that I'm going to have a fire station right there. If everything hits the fan, you know, here they are. I know I'm going to be protected. I have these guys looking out for my back. I mean, I wouldn't want to be there as a contractor. I mean, did they change the terms of the contract too? Or are these people still under the impression they're going to be protected? And they, you know, go back to work to find out, hey, wait a minute, mm-hmm. where's my backup?
So
I can tell you that it appears to the contractor that they still have fire protection, because while during those hours that they're working, there's still a fire company there.
Mm-hmm.
So it appears that there's, and there is coverage while they're working.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but it's the after hours when they leave and when the fire company goes back to their respective area, then the base is left uncovered. So
right.
if you know, we've had this in the past, some stolen vehicle is set on fire, it's left on the side of Lululei Access Road,
right.
It starts to brush on fire, and next thing you know, it impedes into the military installation.
And that is a reality. And that
happens all the time.
I have video where firemen were up there and some of them were endangered. And the fire was so fast that it trapped them practically and burnt their hoses. You
Jeez.
Know, so this is a reality. That's why I'm interested in this situation, that they didn't tell us. And they're exposing the firefighters, the federal firefighters, exposed to a danger, because they're going to be the ones responding from Pearl City at nighttime, when there is no assessment.
And from Pearl City?
Right. Just give an idea. Now, they also do Makua and other areas. So by closing the station on Lululei, that means they'll be responding from Pearl City, a Manana area. Am I correct?
Correct.
And so that means now they got to leave their base at Pearl City, drive up to Lululei, where we know there's major issues there with explosives and what have you, and start to respond while a
You're
simple...
You're going to be kidding me.
No, this...
You might as well not bother leaving.
Yeah, and you get up there, what?
Huh.
As a local term, what? So there you are, right?
Yeah, I mean...
This now puts the firefighter in danger. He's now guessing, at least... Up there, it would be an assessment. Well, you know, look, this is immediate, right? But what, Reed, maybe a 5-minute response if on site? Well, it would be how long to respond from Pearl Harbor?
Well, if if we had a fire station there at Little Little Lake, there would be a response within 3 to 5 minutes.
Right.
If you're responding a company from the Manana area, then you're basically depending on what time of the day, mm-hmm. anywhere from 35 minutes to an hour.
Mm-hmm. If you're lucky. Huh. We're making 3:30 in the afternoon, and you're going anywhere.
Yeah, caller, you have
through traffic.
Yeah, hold on, caller, you have a comment or question? Hello. Sorry to miss you there, caller. You snooze around here, you lose. Go ahead, Reed.
No, I was just saying it depends on the time of the day too. We've experienced brush fires during heavy traffic hours. Mm-hmm. And it takes a fire truck, you know, and coming into the Nanakuli area, coming from Pearl City, it could be very well an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, if I live up there, I wouldn't be happy with that. I would like to have my first responders right there. Yeah. 3 minutes or up to an hour? I mean, it's like telling me the only emergency ambulance service in Hawaii Kai, and don't worry when you're at the North Shore, we get there on time.
And when they first responded, what was it? I'm told it was about a 50 by 50 foot area that was engulfed or engaged there, right?
I'm not sure the exact data of the original.
But it wasn't that large, and they had containment, but air would have helped. And it was windy, quite windy. I sat at back of Old Ma'o Farms, and I turned the camera on because I saw what was unfolding here, right? And then I observed city fire trucks trying to wiggle their way inside the property from Nanakuli Maile side. They couldn't get in.
Well, yeah. You know, what the pattern is this. Let's just cut some costs somewhere. We just, you know, let's take the risk. Who cares about the public once again, you know, and let's just, you know, do whatever needs to be done to save some money. And then, you know, and spend it on what? I mean.
Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Yeah, I just called in on response to a fire issue that, you know, I'm a federal firefighter, and, you know, it's hard for us when we're up there busting our butt trying to put this fire out, and we get back in and we read in the paper, you know, from somebody that no one saw you on the fire line. How do you get your information? Knowing how many guys are on the fire line, how many trucks are there.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing our job. You know, guys have to respond from faraway areas.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're out there putting our lives on the line. And then it feels disrespectful to see somebody write something in the paper with, you know, that wasn't even with us.
and telling them that it was too windy to bring a helicopter in.
Well, we don't have a helicopter. That fire doesn't have a helicopter assigned to us 24 hours a day.
Right.
And there was a city and county helicopter out there doing as best they could.
Yeah, the first
you know,
day, right.
The military has made the decision not to use their helicopters to help us out. You know, that's not our problem. Firefighters up there, we have plenty of trucks.
Mm-hmm.
And the wind was blowing hard.
Okay.
You know, guys were trying their best to keep it intact, and, you know, it ended up jumping roads.
Well, we understand that, and we applaud you for that. We're not taking issue with that, what you did or didn't do. Well, the only issue is that the reality is, yes, you're doing a good job. My concern is that does it put you in jeopardy? And if you say no, that's not a problem. We got 5 days of fire and millions or hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars being expended when a simple decision was made by someone that wasn't on site. This isn't about how good you're doing your job or attacking you or anything of that nature, and that's just the way the cookie crumbles.
That's good, and I appreciate that.
Okay.
What you need to do is write to the Navy and have them stand up that station. Stand up an extra tanker out there.
Oh, we will. Brother,
you know what I mean? Hammer the people that need to be hammered. The department, we're just a little pea in the whole situation.
Well,
we get our marching orders from the top, and the top is the Navy.
So
the Navy needs to come down. You need to hammer the Navy and not the firefighters that are out on the line. The chiefs take their orders from somebody else.
Hold on, brother. Take a good cold drink of iced tea and relax, and if you understand what I'm talking about, you would know that I'm all for you. So, you know, just relax on this one. I think you've read somewhere wrong and associated with me. My purpose of asking these questions is just in the same vein that you're concerned right now.
Okay.
It is putting you in jeopardy. And I mean, while we're all not firefighters, and you are, we are reasonable rational and professional people, so we can make an assessment while we see things. I didn't write in the paper anything, and I haven't hammered the firefighters anyway, other than to say that things could have been avoided, and shame on them for making such decisions to expose them and then expose the taxpayers to a higher cost. It didn't work. Whatever their plans are, the fire got out of control. It didn't work. That's what this discussion is about. How do we avoid that, and how do we man that station again? And thanks to Reed and others, other firemen have called, and they shared this, the concern that, I mean, I've told people this, and they're like, you got to be kidding. They don't have a fire station open there. They close it.
Especially when there's munitions storage out there. We know what happened at the Waikida munitions.
Yeah.
You know what I think you're hearing from a firefighter, you know, who's calling in is the frustration. You know, I mean,
well,
we're asked to do a job.
Yeah.
You know, we depend on our leadership to provide. You know, and I think right now our voices are being tuned out. You know, they're not listening.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And my situation is that when I look at each fireman as a professional, I see them clambering over rocks at nighttime. How dangerous can that be? They're up
on the fire line at 18 hours, 19, 20 hours on the fire line, one meal.
Right, meal, and then in turn, again, some yahoo up top made a decision that could, this is what we're talking about.
Right.
And by bringing transparency, maybe the discussion, see, there's been a danger in this town. Fire. This is the way fires are treated by the public, by the media. Oh, it's a big fire, makes good visual for TV. They come and they tell you how many men are involved, how long it's been engulfed, and then they say, you want to talk about recklessness, maybe it was children who said it because they're out of school now. Well, first of all, if you're willing to tell me that you have a base of such sensitive nature with munitions stored and that you're quick to say children were up there playing, then I would like to fire half of the management anyway. For leaving an area of this nature.
For letting kids on there, yeah.
You follow. So the whole thing is a lie. So I'm interested in this, I don't know your name, is to say the firefighter are already putting their lives online, and then if they can be jeopardized even more so by some guy making an arbitrary and capricious decision, just what?
Reed mentioned Homeland Security made a decision earlier, or maybe I got that wrong.
No, that was the something that was mentioned in the Star Advertiser that our fire chief stated that they needed approval to launch a helicopter. They needed approval from the Department of Defense and Joint Task Force Homeland Security, I believe is what he said.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we should ask these people questions.
Two steps that I've never heard of. I mean, and I may be wrong. I mean, this might be something completely new.
Well, I can only promise you this. I'm going to ask many questions, and it's not consistent with what the regular media. I don't get excited about seeing firefighters going in the black of night, stumbling over gravel and rocks and trees and everything else. And God only knows.
And having to wear the gear.
And up in those areas, illegal dumping occurs, and jagged edges, and you're up there trying to put out a fire.
And then you got to go Homeland Security and ask for permission?
Yeah.
Come on.
When it was already, should have been in place. So,
well, you know, when we were told that the category of the installation had changed, and it went from 24-hour coverage to mutual aid,
mm-hmm.
What that told us was this, is that any fire or any emergency would depend on our counterparts with HFD to respond to that emergency.
Mm-hmm.
We've been fighting this battle all along. We feel that mutual aid is something that you cannot prioritize as your first line of defense. You know, you have to take care of your own responsibilities. That's what we depend on our management to do, is to make sure that they make the sound decisions. And in this case, mutual aid, our counterparts at HFD were busy engaging in firefighting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so how are we supposed to depend on them when they're engaged in their own priority?
Right, right. So the other gentleman, are you there still? Hello?
Welcome to Verizon Wireless.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
You know, it was downsized from A to B, but I didn't hear anybody say anything about munitions having been lowered or there's less, or what's the reason? Just so we can save money? Or, I mean, did they take all the munitions out? I mean, I don't know these things, but I'm just asking, you know, what justifies taking it from an A to B besides now we don't have to have coverage at nighttime? I mean, we just nearly really change a letter and that's it? Because how do we know there's not more, just the same amount of munitions? Because whatever justified it in the first place was that diminished.
Right.
To allow diminishing services.
Yeah. Well,
well, I can tell you this, Carol. I've worked at that fire station prior to it closing. We had a high-ranking official from the Pentagon that came down for a base inspection. He had no idea that the installation was not going to have fire protection for 24 hours.
Wow.
You know, so I think there's a communication breakdown. I think someone is making a decision for whatever reason, if it's cost savings, then it's cost savings. But no one is coming forward to say, I made the decision, and these are the reasons why. We've been asking for the reason, you know.
And no answers.
And if it's, go ahead.
And no answers.
And no answer. We've been given answers. You know, cost savings is one. Mm-hmm. The amount of responses within the last year to 18 months is another. You know, we've always said this. That station will always be the way it is, but there is a mission for them. Not every fire station is busy 24/7.
Right.
But they have a mission.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's the whole thing. I mean, that's why you have the fire station there, because of the munitions in the first place.
Correct.
So somebody made an intelligent decision a long time ago, and now just for cost-cutting purposes, forget about it. Let's just blow it.
I'm having a hard time accepting this because they say, well, it's cost saving. And see, we only had one fire in whatever. But imagine the nature of the circumstances there. It may be the one and only fire that's needed.
That's true.
And how can they even come to terms with this and present such a thinking that, okay, we haven't had that many fires, we'll shut it down, but the nature of the munitions stored there and the dryness and what have you and the potential for it being set by trespassers or whatever, you need immediate response.
Well, we actually don't even know what the munitions is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the funny thing. I mean, you're just thinking a little cartridge or something for your little M16. We don't even know if half the mountainside would blow.
Yeah.
I mean, we really don't know, right? I mean, nobody knows. So.
Well,
you know, but at one point or another, it was deemed worthy to have 24-hour coverage just for that depot, that munitions depot. And now, all of a sudden, it's not worthy anymore? Well, unless the munitions walked out of there and it's been stored somewhere else, what's the rationale?
I say this. The public was never notified, so therefore that's sufficient to start to ask questions and dig backwards.
Yeah.
So, Reed, thank you, and you're welcome to call anytime or send me more information, and I'm going to be asking for you, and again, following up with the governor and asking him to ask some questions, and my legislators should be interested in this. So, is there, real quick, anything in closing?
No. Thank you for your time and your concern
and
allowing us the opportunity.
Okay, well, thank you again, and thank you for trusting that I would not just blow this off. So I appreciate your trust, and thank you again.
Have a good day, gentlemen.
Aloha.
Okay, aloha.
Anyway, guys, thank you again. You'll get it here if we get it, and maybe, trust me, you should be worried about this one. And we don't need to apply the government markings on this one. For that fireman that sounded frustrated, never will I talk down about a fireman. You are my heroes because I've seen you take out animals. I've seen you take out people and what have you and risk your lives. All that I'm saying is that we can't stand by. We know the politics in government, and we know how they can pinch your tail, make you shut up or punish you or fire you. So we'll do the talking on this side, and hopefully you can appreciate it. So
no, I really appreciate the firefighters doing. I mean, that territory up there is so hard. It's a superhuman effort.
And that's brilliant.
I would collapse after 3 minutes.
And the rock is brittle up
yes.
there. Yes. Basaltic, that range side over there. And if you've ever walked it, trust me, it brittle. And a firefighter walking through the night is just setting himself up for death.
Yeah.
So anyway,
thank you for your effort.
Thank you, guys. And this is the Carol Cox Show. And my guest was Mike Ossendorf. And we'll see you next week. Aloha.
Be and
thank you for tuning in to the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on K108.